welcome to Prophecy Girls, a Buffy rewatch podcast.
I'm Kara Babcock, pronouns she, her.
And I'm Stephanie Chow, pronouns she, her.
Join us each week as we break down every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
This is a spoiler-free podcast.
Whether you're watching for the first time
or longtime fans like us,
we'll be analyzing every episode, character, and storyline like it's our first time, too.
During this rewatch, we'll reminisce about our memories of Buffy,
discuss the show's cultural impact,
and provide honest commentary from a 21st century lens.
Thanks for listening.
Now, on to the episode.
Season 7, Episode 10, Bring On the Night.
Something that shook me to my core. No, that's me being dramatic. Something that surprised me, though, was that this is a sneaky Christmas episode.
In what way?
It's Christmas time. There's decorations on the street. They're going to that Christmas tree parking lot thing. Shout out to Amends, which was the other Christmas episode. Buffy literally says, like, oh, I forgot it's December. Like, it's Christmas time. It's Christmas.
I never know what month it is on this show. Also, wasn't it just November? Because hasn't it only been 2 days in the show?
I don't know.
I don't think it could be Christmas. Maybe it's, like, leading up to Christmas?
But the Christmas decorations are out, so surely it's December 15th. Also, the arrival of Giles is a Christmas miracle. Like, it's Christmas Day. We really, really underestimated, like, exactly when it is.
How does time work on this show? Because the whole point of the show is that Buffy has not slept since her conversation with Holden and conversations with dead people, right? Yeah. So it's only been, like, two or three nights since that episode.
Two nights. As in December 23rd and December 24th. And now it's Christmas Day.
But conversations with dead people was November 12th.
Oh, shit, you're right. Okay, I don't know. She says it's December. So, this is a plot hole. This is the biggest time loop plot hole I've ever heard in my life.
We never know what time it is in Sunnydale because apparently nobody else does either.
Maybe people just don't take down their Christmas decorations. It's just always up all year round. Some people do that, you know, not that I do it, you know?
Because you're not a good Christian.
Oh, don't even start with how bad of a Christian I am. Also, shout out to Natasha, who pointed out that she was listening. I don't remember the story behind it. Sorry, Natasha. I'm just going to say that you were listening to Christmas Carols and you heard Dawn We Now Are Gay Apparel was was a lyric in one. And you pointed out to me that, like, hey, Dawn, you should call her that one day. Well, this is perfect because this is the Christmas episode. So at some point I will call Dawn We Now Are Gay Apparel just for you. Did you like the ep, Kara?
I did. You know, it's a little bit dark. It's a little bit dreary. We don't like to see our girl Buffy Summers down, but at the same time, I think it was necessary. I think we needed something like this episode to really firmly establish the stakes when it comes to the first evil in this season, because up until this point, it's just kind of been there, chewing the scenery. And now we're really starting to feel the threat, and I like it.
I like it a lot, too. I really enjoy this episode.
Also, Xander, not bad in that episode, right? Like, I gotta say, like, any episode when Xander's just not that bad, I'm like, that was a good episode.
this episode's not making me want to pull my hair out. What I liked about the episode was the title. So, like, I was gonna ask if you had an alternative title. Bring On the Night, though. At first, I was like, what is this? What does this mean? But by the end of the episode, when Buffy gives her speech, I was like, oh, I really like the title of this episode then, in that case.
I would call it Sunset.
Sunrise, sunset, sunrise. Okay. I would keep it within the theme of Bring On the Night, but because we're suddenly going to be bombarded with young teenage girls, hopefully for the rest of the season, because I live for the youth, I would just change it a little bit to be more youthful and more teenage girl-like. So I would just call it, You Better Bring It.
Bring It On.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, let's get into it. Xander is cleaning up the broken window shards from the broken window in the Summers' living room again. Clearly, it's only been a few hours since the big robed guys attacked, although you and I just pointed out, it's clearly been months since that attack.
I will say, poor Xander, because he did just put that window in.
Yeah, I mean, he says it. He says, it's a loop, like the mummy hand. I'm doomed to replace these windows for all eternity. Maybe we should board these things up until there are less things are less hell-mouthy. Anya and Don, we now are gay apparel. They're researching on the couch. Buffy and Willow are at the sitting room table, not the dining room table, not to be mistaken with that. They're in the sitting room table, and Andrew is still tied to a chair. Anya is saying that there's nothing. Willow says she can't find anything on the internet. She's like asking Buffy if she's sure that it called itself the first. Buffy's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it claimed to be the original evil, the one that came before anything else. And Anya's like, please, how many times have I heard that line in my demon days? I'm so rotten. They don't have a word for it. I'm bad, baddie, bad, bad, bad. Does it make you horny or terrified?
She adds that last part because she's sitting right next to Dawn, and she, at the last minute, she realizes maybe that's not the best thing to say in front of a, whatever, how old Dawn is at this point. I don't know.
A youth. So Buffy says, when I came up against this thing, I felt it. It was ancient and enormous and almost got Angel to kill himself. Xander looks up at that. And I was like, it's funny because he would have wished for the first to have succeeded all the way back when it was trying to get Angel to kill himself. So I'm like, it's funny that they shot to Xander at that point. Buffy says, if we don't rescue Spike soon, God only knows what the first will make him do. Xander's like, I wish Sleeping Ugly would come too. He's been out all night. And he's referring to Andrew. And Anya's like, yes. He was just starting to squeal when the spooky SWAT attacked. Said the first was held up at the Seal of Dens or something. And Don goes over to Andrew and says, maybe he's just faking it so he doesn't have to answer any more questions. And then she slaps him. And he doesn't wake up. And she's like, maybe he's in a fugue state. And she goes to slap him again. And Buffy's like, Don, he'll come too when he comes too. Like, keep reading. She says, if we're going to rescue Spike, we need to figure out how to fight this thing. And Don says, Anya gets to hit him.
Don, we now are gay of Harold. You're getting a little feisty in this season, and I like it.
I love it. And, I know people say season 7 gets dark. And like this episode, like you said, it's dark. It's going to start getting darker, people. I think we can all agree based on this episode. But let's not overlook the joy in this episode. And the joy comes from Dawn and Anya giddily hoping that they can torture Andrew or continue interrogating him very roughly. And I find that really funny. So Buffy says, hand me the Watcher's Codex again. And then someone hands it to her and says, can I get you anything else, baby? How about some tea? It's Joyce. It's Joycey. And Buffy's like, you're not real. And Joyce says, is that slang for you're not for real? And then Buffy says, you're the first. And Joyce says, oh, baby, you're so tired, you're not making sense. Maybe you should get some sleep. Buffy says, no. Joyce says, you can't win against this thing, not if you don't rest. Buffy says, stop being like this. It's lies, lies. And Joyce says, I don't want to scare you, but I want you to take care. You need to wake up now. Buffy's like, what? And it's Xander's shaking her awake saying, you're dream talking. Are you okay? What did you see? Buffy says, nothing. It was nothing. And we could talk a lot about Joyce later because I have questions around this. We cut to men chanting in the cave as Spike is being dragged by the demon thing that came out of the hole. And I'm going to call this vampire with a Y. Remember in the pilot, Giles showed us the vampire book with a Y, an ancient vampire. So we'll call this one the vampire with a Y. And Spike says, go on, give him a kick then. And the first is posing as Spike and says, you always liked that, didn't you? And then he morphs into Drusilla and says, kick a dolly when she's down. That was always your style. Accurate. That is Spike's style based on season 6. So the vampire starts kicking him. And the first says, buckets of energy, poor dear. Been lying in wait for his moment since the bug walked. There, pet. Soon as the moon comes, you'll have your carnage. Little girls tear so easily like pink paper. Till then, we'll have our way with this one. Got it coming, he does. Spike screams. Cut to credits. So we open up on a big splash. Dawn and Anya are throwing water onto Andrew's face. He doesn't wake up. And Dawn suggests that they get hot water. And Anya's like, good thinking. And they go to run to go get it. But then Buffy comes in. So they like pivot. They go to the couch instead. And Dawn's like, nothing. And Buffy's like, what? And she's like, I thought you were going to ask what we were doing.
This is so funny.
Yeah, it's really funny. And that's when Andrew does start coughing awake. And Don and Anya are like, oh, he's quite good. And they go to him. And Anya's like, silly Andrew, you drooled all over yourself.
The fact that she thinks she has to excuse it as if Buffy cares at this point is so funny.
Buffy has not given a shit about Andrew in this house. Not once. You know, like, she used him as a battering ram. So Andrew's like, I was about to be dead. You saved me. And Buffy's like, for the time being, if you don't tell us what we need to know, then I'm going to offer you to the first on a platter and let him chop you into little pieces. And Andrew takes that very seriously. And then he's like, first what? And Anya says, the name of the evil thing that pretended to be Warren to get you to kill Jonathan. Okay, whoa. I didn't realize that they got that far in their interrogation of him. You know, like, he only just started to squeal, and then Spike attacked him, and then he was, like, re-tied up after that.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, they kept on interrogating him earlier today. I don't know. I'm surprised that they got that information, and it was, like, not... It was, like, just... He just told them, oh, yeah, I murdered Jonathan. You know, like, and we didn't get to see it. Also because they know Jonathan. So I would have loved to see the Scoobies' reaction to that, you know? Ooh, Seb's here. Bear with me, listeners. You wouldn't have heard it. I'll cut this out. But Seb just dropped off Dairy Queen for me. So
I predicted he was going to do that.
So I'm going to eat this whilst I continue summarizing. Andrew says, not very ominous sounding. And Don's like, no, it is if you understand the context. And Andrew's like, evil names should be like Lex or Voldemort. And Buffy takes control of the conversation. She says, where's the seal?
So we cut to... Wasting no time, Andrew is leading Xander, Buffy, and Dawn into the basement of Sunnydale High to the seal of Denzelthar. They've been down there a while looking because poor Andrew's memory is not that great when it comes to navigating this dark high school basement. And finally, they come upon the seal. Xander says, oh, check out the goat-headed badness. Buffy says, what does it do? And Andrew says, I don't know. It didn't work because there wasn't enough blood. And then he turns as if to leave, and Buffy stops him from going. Dawn notices that there's the wheel contraption that Spike had been strapped to in the previous episode. She says, oh, it looks like the first found another sacrifice or a music video. Buffy says, oh, the seal could have been activated. Maybe that's what the first needed Spike for.
We never learn what the first needs Spike for. Maybe we're going to still, but even by the end of this episode, it's like, be on my side. Why? But then also, why did they need his blood?
They didn't need Spike's blood. They just needed blood. And, you know, I think the first has been torturing Spike because he's got a soul. And I think the first wants to be a little evil. You know, the first also tortured Angel for the same reason.
The first just wanted to have some kinky evil play with its love, well, Spendity.
And if Angel, you know, as an ensouled vampire was like this potential, like, force for good, right? Spike could also be a force for good now that he has a soul. And the first is like, nah, we're going to put a stop to that right away.
Interesting.
Andrew insists that he had nothing to do with the seal being activated or Spike being tortured. Xander says, thanks for clearing that up. Otherwise, we'd think you were up to no good here at the Satanic Manhole cover. You killed your best friend. Andrew says, but he's in a place of joy and peace. He told me. And Xander says, you got tricked by a fake ghost. Whoops Among Us is not being tricked by a fake ghost. Come on, Xander.
You know, I will give Xander, compliment is too far. I will speak on his character's behalf for one moment. This would genuinely disgust him, the idea that Andrew murdered his best friend. Because Xander, as much as we don't like him, he puts his life on the line for his friends all the time.
Well, also, isn't he, like, the only one of the Scoobies who hasn't tried to kill everybody?
Well, I mean, it depends. Do we consider all of the spell work and demon summoning that he does as, indirectly trying to kill anybody?
No, like, he's obviously done harm, but I would argue that none of those things led to, like, him directly trying to kill people, like Willow has, like Buffy has, right? So, you know? Just saying. Of all the Scoobies, that's one thing we could say about Xander.
The bar's low.
Oh, absolutely. And we won't forget what he did in the pack.
No. So,
never forget.
Hashtag.
So Buffy has them all grab shovels, which are just conveniently located in the basement. I don't know, for geology club?
That's where you keep shovels, Kara. if you want to find a shovel, you go to the basement and they're going to be there, obviously. No, no, it would have been funny. It was like leftover pickaxes from bad eggs. Remember you and I were like,
well, that would be a lot harder to use to cover up a hole.
You and I were like, we've never seen so many pickaxes in our life. Like, where did they go?
Again, geology club.
Spare tools.
So they're all covering up the seal with the dirt and stuff. And then they're going to leave. And on the way out, Xander and Andrew are bonding over comics. They both mention the exact same issue. I think it's Wonder Woman. And Xander realizes he's also a nerd. And he's now identifying with the guy he just criticized for killing his best friend. So he's like, oh, yeah, I don't like this. And he like pushes Andrew away. Meanwhile, Donatella asks, what's next? Spike is still missing. And that's when Robin Wood appears out of the shadows. And he's still looking disheveled, because remember, this is the same continuation as the night before. He was just burying Jonathan's body out of town, and now he's back, I assume, to cover up the seal, because he's got that shovel. And he asks Buffy why she's here, because he's shocked. And Don says, she was vomiting and oozing from various places. And Robin's like, yeah, you don't have to remind me. And then Don says, oh, it's amazing. The doctor gave her pills. Buffy says, cream. And then Buffy says, I'm all better. And so Robin's holding a shovel and he says, oh, somebody left this in the courtyard. And I was just returning it. As if he has to offer an explanation when he's the principal of the school, they're the trespassers, and all of them are holding shovels.
Everyone's suspicious AF.
It's like a scene of Among Us, right? It's like, you're all sus. We need to have a conference. Okay. Buffy says, oh, that's some full service principling. Robin says, I try.
But he says it like, I try. And then it like zooms in on his face. It does that a lot. He does a lot of ominous pointed looks in this episode.
And it's the delay before he says anything, right? It's like, are you going to call us on this bullshit? So he looks at Buffy's shovel and Buffy says, oh, I was helping Dawn with a school project. We buried a time capsule.
Wow. How did
Buffy come up with the good lie?
I think Dawn probably told her that ahead of time.
Because then Dawn, you know, reliable Donald, never misses a beat, says, hello, people of the future. Kids today like Red Bull and Jackass. So they're going to leave. Robin tells Buffy that they could really use her back at work. He's been waitlisting kids who really want to see her. Things are starting to back up. It's been one day, Principal Wood. Buffy's been out sick one day.
And the school is not the only thing that's been backed up. If he's to believe what Dawn said, Buffy's backed up too.
So Buffy says, I'll be there tomorrow, 100% ooze free. And Principal Wood and Buffy glance back at each other as they go their separate ways.
I'd be glancing back too at dead ass.
Oh dear, okay.
So not sure what time of day it is now or what day it is. Boxing day. Willow's doing witchcraft in the dining room table. On is assisting her. Dawn is on the computer. Buffy is expositioning for Xander, telling Xander that Dawn's researching the seal. Willow's trying a locator spell to find the first. And Xander tells Buffy that she should rest because she's been up for 2 days. And Buffy's like, I couldn't sleep, too much going on. Xander says, we'll be okay. We faced this kind of stuff before. Buffy says, you didn't see the first. I did. I felt it. But then suddenly, there's an explosion out of Willow. Anya's blown into the wall. Dawn falls over. Willow snorts a bunch of magic dust and it breathes it out and shoots pew 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 at Buffy, who falls over. And Willow shouts, you only make me stronger. And Xander runs over and like it's like the first, like the one from Amends, like pops out of Willow's body. And Xander smashes the jar or whatever, the magic thing. And the spell ends, Willow collapses, Buffy goes to her, Xander checks on Anya. Willow's still like feeling possessed, you know, she's like, it's in me. Buffy is comforting her on the ground. Willow says, I don't want to hurt anybody, please Buffy, don't let it make me. And Buffy promises that they won't use magic to fight this thing until we know what we're doing. And Willow just apologizes and says she can't. Buffy is leaving the house and Xander insists that he goes with her. And she's like, I'm doing this alone. Xander says, you said yourself, you don't know how to fight this, the first, or even where it is. Buffy says, it's out there. It's hurting my friends. I'll find it. She opens the door and Rupert Giles is there. And Kara, I went downstairs and I tested this for myself. And every time I opened the door, Rupert Giles was not just standing there. So this is very lucky for Buffy. He says, Buffy. Buffy says, Giles. And she goes to go touch him. But then a girl, a youth, cuts in front of her first and says, nice place, bit of a mess. And another one follows and nods at Buffy. And another one stops in front of Buffy and says, this is a Slayer? Huh. And walks away unimpressed. And I was like, you aloof teens. You youths.
Youths.
You youths and your attitudes. Giles says, sorry to barge in. I'm afraid we have a slight apocalypse.
Giles is back. Remember, last time we were concerned that he might be dead. So this is a step up.
I know. Well, he's clearly not dead. Or is he? Let's bring that up at the end of the episode. I have a little point. So Dawn is standing with the three youths. And she says, they're all slayers. And Giles says, potential slayers, waiting for one to be called. There were many more like them all over the world, but now there's just a handful and they're all on their way to Sunnydale. And Giles came to Sunnydale to give this exposition. that's what he used to do all the time. He's back at it. Buffy says the others were murdered. And then we get a flashback. This season, Kara loves flashbacks. All we get are flashbacks.
But this is not a finger touch flashback.
No, it's not as satisfying as a physical, tangible, tactile flashback. We see the two girls from Lessons and Beneath Me getting killed. Giles says in cold blood, as well as their watchers. So this is opening up a can of worms in terms of questions, because it appears that potential slayers, just like Kendra, get watchers, right? They have watchers that come to them when they're young and train them, waiting for them to be called before they're called. But not Americans, because Faith didn't get one. Or did she? Because her watcher died. Anyway, we assume Faith didn't get one and Buffy didn't get one. So like, what? Why? Like, what's the consistency here, you know?
So Buffy got one after she got called. Remember from the movie, Merrick showed up. I think that was a bit of a surprise. I think sometimes they fail to identify all of the potentials. Remember, like, Buffy's very rough when she gets to Giles. And he's like, we have a lot of training to do. Faith had a watcher, but her watcher was killed and then replaced with Miss Gwendolyn Post.
But we don't know Faith had that watcher. He could have been gone to her when she got called for a couple months, then died.
Yeah,
from,
that's a good point.
What was the name of that demon that was after Faith? I don't remember.
Kissing Toast.
Kissing Toast, of course. Yeah, so I think it's Americans. They're just like, we just let the Americans do their own thing. And then when it's time, we call them in. And I will add, from these three girls, it appears one might be American, one is Australian, and one is from England, is my guess.
I thought two of them were British. They just have different accents.
Oh, I thought one was Australian. Molly. I thought she was Australian.
No, Molly just has a different accent. She's just got more of like a working class London accent. And then Annabelle's is more posh.
Okay. I was like, oh, no. I was hoping it was an Australian. All right, sorry. Guess just two English people. So Giles says, we always feared this day would come when there's an attack against not just an individual slayer, but against her whole line. Flashback to the It's Started scene from Sleeper. But we don't get to see how Giles survived that attack. So Giles says the First wants to erase all the slayers in training and their watchers along with their methods. And Buffy says, and then Faith, and then me. And with all the potentials gone and no way of making another, it's the end. No more slayer ever. And Willow says, we haven't found any information on the First. Giles says it predates any history, written history, and it rarely shows its true face. The only record I know is in the council library. And then he says the council is gone, obliterated. They were in a session and there was an explosion. And Will's like, that means all the council's records are destroyed. And I laughed at that because I was like, Willow's basically saying, fuck those members. What about the books?
Well, we all know Willow cares more about knowledge than people.
Literally, like, what?
Also, did the council not have duplicate records? Like, what were they doing with their time?
Well, remember, it was Giles' idea to upload everything onto the internet. Maybe Lord Mullick, praise Mullick, maybe he got in the way of them doing that over.
Right, but they could still copy things out by hand, right? Like, yeah. it seems like a weakness to have all of your precious knowledge stored in one location that could be, I don't know, blown up.
What? The Watchers Council? Like, stupid and inefficient? No. So Giles calls Annabelle over, and one of the girls, she put the books on and folders on the table. Giles like, that's all that's left. The mystic secrets, the Watchers, and whatever I could find on the first. When I learned what was happening, I stole them. And Anya says, and you blew the council up. This is what happens when you're all stuffy and repressed. You overreact. And Giles is like, I didn't. He says, it must have been an agent of the first after my little burglary session. So this made me laugh too, Kara, because... Okay, so the last time we saw the council before they got blown up, their office was ransacked. It was like turned upside down. And what I'm hearing is that that was Giles.
Well, and remember, they had no idea where he was, because when Buffy phones them, right, and he's like, oh, we'll keep an eye out for them. And then he hangs up. And then he's like, the girl knows nothing, right? Like, they're looking for Giles. And,
he's down the street. And getting a hot dog.
Where could he be?
Getting a hot dog after a long night of burglary. Okay, but I just think it's so funny that he could have just went in there, grabbed the files he needed, but it looks like he just went ham and trashed the place while he was there.
But I want the the missing episode where Giles has to assemble a team for his heist, right? Like, I want to know what kind of team, you know, who's on his team? Was it Oz? who else could help Giles rob the Watchers Council?
If you were going to pull off a heist, you could only take two Scooby members, who are you taking?
I mean, Anya, obviously. We already know that she's really good at heists. And
yeah, Anya's a good one. And then I would take Angel, because he used to pop in and out of rooms without making a fucking sound. And like,
yeah,
you know,
that's good.
He's pretty stealth.
I mean, remember when Buffy had to go in and steal the Books of Ascension from the mayor?
Yeah, right? That didn't work out.
That wasn't her fault, though. She was doing her best.
No, it was her fault, because they decided to shimmy her down on like a Jonathan and Andrew, like a contraption from the roof. And then they got jammed because they didn't practice before they did it.
Right, that wasn't her fault.
And like Buffy wanted to use it, I'm sure, because Angel's like, I could just grab it. But it's Buffy's operation, so she's going to go in there. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I want to know. I'm going to put that out there. I'll be like, what are people? Who's on your heist team? All right. Giles says, the knowledge contained in these files had to be protected, and there wasn't time for bureaucracy and debate. The council knows no other way. And then Andrew shouts, and it cost them their lives.
And I love how, like, the camera swivels over to him, because at that point, like, he hasn't spoken at all this scene, so we've all forgotten that he's there, yes. But he's still tied to the chair.
It's actually really, really brilliant and timing. It's really
nobody
funny.
Nobody has explained to Giles or Annabelle or Molly or Kennedy, like, what is going on with this guy being tied to the chair.
So not only has everyone in the room not paid attention or forgotten about him, the audience forgot about him too. So him shouting in with the most dramatic statement ever is really funny. And I also find it very rich that Giles says there wasn't time for all that when there was time to trash the place before he slunk out. So Buffy just says, can we gag him? And Xander's like, uh-huh. And he goes to like put table for his mouth. Giles starts saying what he knows about the first. He says it can change form. It only appears in the guise of someone who's passed away. It's not corporeal. It can't touch or fight on its own. It works through those it manipulates and its followers, the bringers. And one of the girls says, oh, the freak with the black robes. And the other girl, who I said is Australian, apparently she's not, says, yeah, with the hoodies and the crazy alphabet eyes. I never saw, it's the way she said saw. I never saw them though, but she says like, I never saw them though. The British one says, shh, Molly, Mr. Giles doesn't need us prattling on. And Giles says, the first is unlike anything we've faced before. There's evil, and then there's the thing that created evil, the source. And Buffy says, that's what it claims.
No, Giles, the source is from Charmed.
Ah.
Now you're crossing the streams, Giles.
Giles, you've been away too long, even on another show. Giles says, that's what it is. It's had eternity to act, endless resources. How to defeat it, honestly, I don't know, but we have to find a way. If the Slayer line is limited, then the Hellmouth has no guardian. The balance is destroyed. I'm afraid it falls to you, Buffy. Sorry, I mean, we'll all do what we can, but you're the only one who has the strength to protect these girls and the world against what's coming. And then there's a pause, and then Xander says, but no pressure. Another good line from Xander.
Typical men. Mm-hmm. It's the end of the world, and what do? They go to a woman and say, are you going to do something about this?
Yeah, but so what are you doing here? Like, I've done my part.
What's the plan?
What's the plan?
I've pointed out the problem to you.
Right? And like, Giles comes with all this information that we already fucking knew. We already know these things. So the one girl is like, that's it. That's the plan. Okay, this girl's on our side, Kara. She knows. She's like, I don't see how one person, even a Slayer, can protect us. I saw what those Bringer guys can do. They tore apart my Watcher. If the thing is the root of all evil, isn't the Hellmouth its number one vacation spot? Don't you think we should be hiding our asses on the other side of the globe? And Annabelle's like, Kennedy. And Buffy's like, no, she's not wrong. We need more muscle. That's why we need to fight Spike. Ugh, is that really true? Do we really?
Sadly, yes.
Like, sure. Sure, but like, Buffy should also be calling in Angel Investigations. They should be reaching out to Oz. You got some werewolf friends that can come over here and help us out.
Whoa, Steph. It's just the end of the world. She's not going to go to her ex just because it's the end of the world. It's not serious.
Buffy, it's the perfect excuse to rekindle the flame. And call in all the troops, you know? So Anya says, yeah, he'll help. Bless Anya. He's like, Spike will help. That is if he's not crazy or off killing people or dead or all of the above. And I love Anya for that. So real quick, let's go to the vampire. The vampire with a Y is drowning Spike in a classic Sunnydale sewer cave pond that we
waterboarding,
know.
Yeah.
We haven't seen one of these sewer cave ponds in a while. Yeah, so vampires can't breathe. So
thank you. I wrote this down too. I'm like, what is going on?
Kara, I think what's happening is that the vampire with a Y is going after Spike's hair. I think that's what is the torture here for him.
but we see when Spike's under the water, we see him like struggle and give up.
Yeah, because his hair is going to cut it next. maybe. It's like the sensation of drowning. Like maybe they feel like, no, I don't know why I'm defending anything, but this is stupid. They pull Spike out. And what I will say for James Marsden is like, good for him. He coughs up all this water and it's clear that like he put a bunch of water in his mouth and they're like, action. And he was like, and I thought that was really effective. I want to try it. The first, AKA Drusilla, says, tried to enlighten little Buffy, didn't you? Spilled our secrets like seed, but you forgot. I say what you tell and what you know. I say when this is over, and I'm not done with you yet, not nearly. And then the vampire with a Y goes back to giving Spike a bath.
Buffy is bringing Giles to the cavern under the Christmas tree lot where she first met the first in season 3. And she says, this is bad, isn't it? A new kind of bad. Giles says, just in time for Christmas. So,
like, isn't American Thanksgiving before this would even be a thing, you know?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Like, they make it seem like it's like 2 days before Christmas. Like, that's what they're making it seem like. Yeah.
Buffy asks, will Giles ever show up for a real visit? The kind where the world isn't about to end? And Giles says, if we survive this, I promise. Buffy says, good, because I miss you. Giles says, I miss you too.
Aww. But they cut out when he said, only if you send Dawn away.
It goes without saying.
So Andrew is still tied to a chair. He's asking Xander how long he's been following Buffy. And he says, I don't follow her. She's my best friend. And Andrew's like, she seems like a good leader. Her hair is shiny. Does she make you stab things? And then we cut to Willow, who is with Kennedy. She's making up the couch and she's like, okay, Annabelle will sleep here. Molly can sleep in Dawn's room. And Kennedy's like, not if Dawn actually wants to sleep. Molly will talk her ear off. Willow says, okay, Molly down here, you with Dawn and Annabelle in my room. And Kennedy's like, bad idea. Annabelle snores. Willow's like, okay, you want to handle the sleeping arrangements? Kennedy's like, okay. But before she goes, she turns around and she says, you better not hog the covers. And then she smiles at Willow and Willow clutches her pearls. And that's when Dawn comes over and says, does she want to eat? And Will's like, what? She's new. And oh my God, I was not prepared for this dirty joke. It's pretty fucking funny. But again, it just opens up many, many questions. The first question
Sorry, what? That was a joke?
Yeah, Kara. Let me repeat it. Let's see if you get it this time. This Kennedy girl is flirting with Willow on the stairs.
Flirting with Willow?
Yeah, that's what she says. You better not hog the covers. Because they're obviously she's intending to share the bed with her, where she has all these blankets and pillows. You think that Willow was going to set her up on the floor or something.
Oh.
Right? But she automatically is like, we're going to share the bed. And like, she obviously conned her way into sleeping with Willow, like in the bed. So when Dawn comes over and says, does she want to eat? Like eating out? Like sexually?
Oh. Okay, that Cara's went over face. My head.
Yeah, Cara's like, Cara clutches her purse too. Okay, so now you see, it's like, it's a dirty joke. It's like, whoa.
But so does Dawn?
No, Dawn came over, she's talking about something else. She's talking about dinner. But the context.
Right, that's what I thought Dawn was talking
yeah,
about.
She is, but it's Willow.
Taking it as an innuendo.
Willow's like, what? She's new. As in like I don't even know her, right? So, oof. So, questions. The first one is, why are you all so bad at sleeping arrangements? I could have figured this shit out right away. Dawn, Buffy's not sleeping anyway. She refuses to. You're going to Buffy's room. You and Buffy can share because you're sisters. All three girls get Dawn's room to figure out how they want to sleep, share the bed, you know, move around in there, switch up the bed every night, whatever they want to do. But like, put them all there. And then leave the downstairs area for like strategizing or like socializing, right? Like no one has to sleep down there. That would suck. Done.
Well, so clearly, now that you've explained that Kennedy was flirting with Willow to me, Kennedy was just rejecting all of Willow's ideas until it ended up with the configuration where she's in Willow's room.
Yeah, well, for sure. But I'm like, all of you should have just been like all three girls in this room, and Kennedy can sneak into Willow's room if she wants to.
Well, so where's Andrew staying? And should the answer not be Xander's place?
Yeah, like there's in the spare master bedroom.
New prisoner, there. Xander. Xander's now the warden of the group.
Like that's what I want to know. Also, I have questions. So it's like clearly the girls are staying there now, right? They're so poor. How are they going to afford to feed five extra mouths?
Well, also, Willow's in Buffy's old room. So Willow's in the smaller bed. Buffy's in the master bedroom with the larger bed. So wouldn't it make sense to put two people in that room, not
Buffy
in Willow's room?
Only just achieved the status of the master bedroom in this house. I'm not taking that away from her. She deserves her space as the leader of this group.
Where is Giles staying? With Xander?
Maybe Giles got his old apartment back. Yeah, like this is, I just, like logistically, I could have figured out a much better sleeping situation. There's still the basement, right? Andrew is going to stay in the chair for the time being, I guess. Or if anything, Andrew, unless they're trying to keep him hostage, but he doesn't seem like he wants to leave. So like Andrew being on the couch would make the most sense, or going with Xander, as you said, but Xander probably wouldn't want him there because Andrew killed his best friend. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. So Dawn says she burnt the mac and cheese, which doesn't surprise me at all, Cara, when we've seen Dawn's cooking in the past. And they're saying they're going to order pizza. Annabelle says she's a veggie. Molly says she's cracked. They find biscuits and the girls all start munching together. Willow joins them. And like they're, you know, there's lots of noise, lots of activity in
girl
the kitchen.
Girl dinner.
Yeah.
Girl dinner.
Which I had earlier tonight. I had girl dinner. I had edamame and like a little cup of leftover pasta.
Love it.
And now I'm having Dairy Queen. Yeah, so I like this little scene at the end because, like, when have we ever seen the Summers house filled with this many girls all, like, munching together and just, like, you know, getting settled in? It's interesting.
There's a preponderance of women in this episode. I mean, Buffy as a show has always been heavy on the female cast, but I remember thinking as I was watching the earlier scene where Giles is doing the exposition, you've got Dawn, Anya, and Willow sitting together on the couch. And then you have the three potentials standing on the other side of the room. And you have Buffy sitting down, right? And yeah, you've got Giles and Xander and Andrew in the room. But it strikes me. And now with this scene in the kitchen and all the girls just kind of hanging out together like this, that like the blocking in this episode, the way they arrange the characters really seems to emphasize this kind of sense of community and unity among all these female characters, it's like, yeah, this is a show about women. This is a show about girls kicking ass. And I like that, right? Like, is this not what you would expect a house full of young women to be doing, is trying to figure out like who's sleeping where and then like burning mac and cheese, trying to feed themselves?
Yeah. And like ultimately being like, we want pizza, but then there's got to be three different kinds of pizza because everyone's got different dietary restrictions. I love it.
And this also raises an important point for us to consider as the episodes go on, which is, you know, once you start having basically an army in your house, as Buffy's going to say later, that opens up a whole can of logistical worms, because you can't order pizza every night. That's not feasible. It's too expensive.
Let's not forget that Andrew brought over like 40 pounds of meat the day before.
That is a good point. Clearly Dawn was like, I'm not touching that.
Like, Annabelle can't have it, but that's it.
True. Yeah. Annabelle will have to have the edamame. But that's the point, right? Is it's like, if you have all these people staying here, somebody's going to have to be in charge of just the logistics of, you know, bathroom rotas and cleaning and meal prep and all that stuff. Like, an army marches on its stomach. So it's not just about the fighter, right? This is, you know, this is a more complicated scenario than we've actually seen the Scoobies dealing with, just from a logistics standpoint alone.
And that could be a really good role for Anya to take on, because she doesn't really have a purpose other than to be around.
Oh, she would love to be the house dictator.
Right?
The house bunny, the house mom.
The house bunny. I also, because I was going to talk about this later in the episode, but since we're already here and you're mentioning how it's a great thing to show, you know, the female bonding, the women being women on a show that's supposed to be about women, I personally really like this turn that the season is taking, right? Like, I keep saying I've been enjoying season 7. I think it's fun. Obviously, we have our complaints here and there, but overall, I think it's been solid so far. And now they've clearly introduced the plot points that are going to take us throughout the rest of the season. And I like it. I think it's really cool that they're introducing the idea of potential slayers, and they're about to show us a really difficult villain, or like they have the villain in the first, but then they have this minion, or like this little example of what the first can bring out of the gates of hell, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's really cool. So I like this episode because it's giving us a little piece of what we can expect moving forward. And I think there's maybe the episode should have been called Potential. There's a lot of potential here for a really great season, in my opinion. Giles and Buffy are exploring the abandoned tree lot area, and Buffy falls through the hole into the cave below. And the city of Sunnydale is incredibly lucky that over 4 years, not one person fell in that hole.
Right?
They would have been sued.
If Buffy is looking for a cave, notice how ill-prepared she is. She has no rope. She has no flashlight. Does she just expect there to be lights down there?
Okay, but Buffy's been jumping in and out of holes for 7 years. We brought that up in lessons when she just dived into that hole in the bathroom. And sometimes, once in a while, when she remembers, Buffy can fly, right? And like, Buffy can jump really, really high. She never does it when you and I want her to do it. But
well, that's because she's like a cat.
Because I think it's true. It's true. I think the last time she used it was in Two to Go, when she's like, Willow needs me, and she jumps over the forest to get to her, and then Xander catches up 5 minutes later. But I was like, Buffy, use that jump to get out of that pool area when the fish monsters from Go Fish were attacking you. Use it in this episode when you need to escape this vampire with a Y.
Only one jump per season.
Once in a while, she leaps, and it's never the right time.
It takes her time to recharge. That's why she couldn't jump out of the hole that Willow trapped her in with the root monsters, right?
Like,
she'd already used her jump earlier.
But I think even in that episode, I said, like, Buffy, just jump. just jump. But I think you're right. One season, if that. One a couple years. And she wastes it every time. So anyway, we love you, Buffy. Never change.
She just, in the seasons where we don't see her jump, it's because she used her one jump on something really like inane, like
something we don't even need to look at.
She had to put the angel on top or something. Or the cat stuck in the tree.
Don's like, my frisbee's on the roof. Can you grab it? Oh no. Anyway, she tells Giles to stay up there. She's going to check it out. And she'll just jump out when she's done. So as she's looking around, we see a figure darting around in the background. And I was like, Gnarl?
Well, same actor.
Oh, is it? Okay. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. R.I.P. Camden Toy.
All alone. Okay. She turns around and the vampire with a Y is in her face. He loved the sneak attack, right? And like you and I have always said that vampires love showing up at the right time, like the most inconvenient time usually. This vampire invented that, obviously. So boom, he's in her face. He punches her so hard that she flies and hits the wall. Then he starts beating on her. He's like roaring like a lion. And Buffy gets a couple kicks in, okay? But it's very fast, this creature, and she manages to jam her stake in its chest, but it doesn't do anything. It doesn't die. It just pulls the stake out and like smiles at her. And Buffy is shooketh. So she gets punched and kicked so hard a couple of times. It crushes her hand at one point. It grabs her neck and lifts her up. She grabs, you know, like some caves, not all caves, but this cave particularly have these like cave clubs. Like what do you call like cave roofs?
Stalactites.
Say that again.
Stalactites.
Stalactite is a cave roof. If you wanted to know the definition.
And if it's growing from the ground, it's a stalagmite.
Wow. I'm not even going to ask you why you know that. In fact, you could be making that shit up and I won't back check you. I just believe you. Buffy grabs one because I don't know, Kara, are these stalagmites, stalactites, whatever, are they easy to pull off or is this because she's a slayer?
It's a slayer thing.
Is it bat poo? Is it guano? what are they like? Is it? It's like rock.
Yeah. So it's mineral deposits. Water from the cave drips down and has minerals in it. And slowly, over hundreds of thousands, millions of years, the mineral deposits solidify. So that's why, yeah, it's tapered up from the ground and it's forming an inverted triangle from the top. They're basically like mineral icicles.
And there's like it could have been a column, except that in the middle, it's just not. It's gone.
Yeah, sometimes in some caves, you see that they do connect.
Caves are so cool, people. All right? This is cool information. After Buffy, once we're done, we're going to become a geological cave diving podcast. Like the Magic School Bus.
Spelunking.
I will never spelunk. I'm so... just I know we're
me
off
neither.
The rails. We're off the rails. I will never skydive. I will never snorkel.
Same.
Like you're the people that like to swim through caves underwater. Like what the fuck?
Oh yeah, no. Cave diving, like this whole thing, like I'm
pass.
Hey, I'm afraid of the dark.
Oh.
I'm not claustrophobic, but like dark, tight spaces, no thank you. Also, I'm 6'4", so there's no way I'm fitting in those cave tunnels.
There's some people who are like, I've never seen a hole that I don't want to like squeeze my way through. Me, if I saw that hole, I'd be like, I don't care what's on the other side. I literally don't. Anyway, the cave is cool, everybody. And Buffy uses the cave itself to beat on this vampire.
That's because Buffy's good at turning the environment into her weapon, as we're going to see later in this episode.
She's like, oh, good. This vampire with a Y lifted me so high, I can take this mineral and make it into a club. So the vampire lets go of her and she crawls up. She doesn't jump. She crawls up the side of the cave and is out at the top. But then the vampire with a Y grabs her foot. And as she's still crawling out, okay, we get this shot of sun, of like the daylight breaking through. And Giles is like, like right there. But notice he doesn't grab her to help her out. Okay. And then the vampire is like, no daylight, and goes back inside. He doesn't say it, but that's what he was thinking. You could tell.
I also love how the first earlier was like, don't worry, baby vampire. Just wait for the moon and you can go after Buffy. And then it's like, well, clearly the baby vampire was just hanging out here. Sorry, the vampire with a Y was just hanging out in the cave all night. Did not go after Buffy. I don't know if they knew Buffy was coming for it. Like,
what time is it when Giles shows up? Was it like right before sunset?
Well, and so what time was it before Giles showed up and they went to get? Because it was nighttime when they still went to Sunnydale to cover up the seal, right? Because It was just after the attack.
It was in the morning, yeah.
Principal Wood was still in his clothes from the previous night. So that was still the same night, right?
Same morning.
It was morning. Because Buffy said she was going to be into work that day.
I think it was morning because I recall, I assume it was morning. Like 7 a.m. in the morning to bury a time capsule in the basement of the school. Yeah, well, let's not go down this road, Kara. You know what? We're an hour into the episode. It's too late for this. We can't. So we assume it's Christmas Day, the 4 a.m. sunrise. And that baby vampire with a Y waited all fucking night for this. And was like, Drusilla lied to me. So Buffy and Giles are entering the kitchen, and the potentials are already in the kitchen. They're up because of because of jet lag. And Buffy is visibly hurt, right, from the fight. And she tells him she got into a fight, but she doesn't know what against. And Giles asks if this should be a private conversation. And Buffy refers to the girls as the next generation and then says, "No time to coddle them, Giles. Welcome to the war room, guys." And I love that. I love that Buffy is inclusive of them. Right? She's like, they need to know anyway, well, right?
And then so all three potentials perk up and are ready to listen, but they do it in different ways, right? So Kennedy just kind of gets very focused. Molly's interested, and Annabelle takes out a notepad.
Classic Annabelle. Are we sure Molly's not Australian? I thought she was. Okay. Someone's going to come in here and be like, "Know your fucking accent, Steph, you Wisconsin bitch."
I like how we're saying you're from Wisconsin now.
I've embraced it. That's my new identity. Giles says, "What you fought was a vampire, but it was something more than that. It was a vampire with a Y." Okay, he didn't say that. He's like, "It's a Turrican, primordial, ferociously powerful killing machine, as single-minded as animals. They are the vampire that vampires fear, an ancient, entirely different race. And until this morning, I thought they were a myth." And Buffy says, "So the first shows up, now this. Think it's a coincidence?" And Giles says, "It's more likely the Turrican is here as an ancient of the first." So Giles, did you really get a good enough view of it to, "Oh, Turrican"? And he must have.
Well, the sun was shining directly on it.
And it goes back inside. So Annabelle says, asks if Buffy slayed it. Buffy's like, "No, it's still up there somewhere." Molly asks what it wants. Buffy says, "All of us dead. But for now, looks like sunlight is keeping the uber vamp away." And Giles suggests that Buffy go to sleep. A few hours of sleep will do the world of difference. And Buffy refuses. Giles says, "You're exhausted." Buffy says, "Comes with a gig. Somehow I don't think taking on prehistoric evil comes with nap time." She tells the potential, like, "Okay, sorry, you guys, but you're just going to have to wait it out and just sit tight." She's going to go to work and see what she can find out and be back before sunset. Giles says, "How do you plan to research something as ill-defined as the first?" And Buffy says, "I have the best plan ever." And before we get to the butt of that joke, it's so interesting now that we've had the one vision, dream, hallucination, we don't know, of Joyce telling Buffy that she needs to sleep. And then now we have Giles telling Buffy that she needs to sleep.
Well, I think it's a conspiracy. I think it's big sleep, you know, telling us that we need sleep because they just want to sell us sleep stuff.
Just like the milk stuff in season 3.
Well, have you ever thought, Steph, that if you didn't have such a comfortable bed with comfortable pillows that, you know, would you ever really fall asleep? No, sleeping is just a scam invented by mattress companies.
Sleeping is for the weak, in my opinion. That's why I only sleep one hour a day.
But I love it so much.
Sleeping is the fucking best.
It really
is.
I can't keep up the bit because I love sleep so much.
Kara, I miss sleep so much.
Yeah, I know. You've got it rough right now.
to be in Buffy's position, I'd be like, "Great idea, Giles. I'm going to go sleep for a week. See you at New Year's."
Cut to Buffy at her desk in her cubicle at work. She is Googling, well, not Googling because it's not Google, but it's an anonymous early 2000s search engine. She's searching up evil at her desk while talking to Willow on the phone. And she says, "How hard can this be? Maybe the first has been taken by surprise by this whole technology thing." And then she says, "Oh, there's 900 1,517 results. Only that many? The internet, the web, it was so young back then. Principal Wood comes up behind her and sees what she's searching and reads her screen. And so she quickly adds, again, Buffy's like really good at dissembly in this episode. She adds manifestations of evil in the movies to the end of it. And Buffy says, oh, I just love those evil, evil movies. Exorcist, Blair Witch. So then Robin says, well, I'm not a big fan of scary movies, even the hokey ones. Sometimes they go to a place that I think kids can stand to avoid. And he gets all serious and he sits across from Buffy and she says, oh, it's not for the kids. And Robin says, well, I'm only saying that once you see true evil, it can have some serious afterburn. And then you can't unsee what you saw ever. It's just one opinion. I better get back to work. And he gets up. And Buffy's like, what kind of movies do you like? And he says, me? Mysteries. I love finding out what's underneath it all at the very end. And he grins.
It's funny because he doesn't, he grins, but he didn't look at her when he said that. He like answered her question, not facing her. And he did it so ominously. So now we're like, okay, if last episode we don't think he's evil, like surely he's evil now with the way he's talking to her. Although, my counterpoint was when I was watching this, I was like, maybe he's pulling a Sid the Dummy from the puppet show in season one, and he thinks that Buffy is an evil person.
Yeah, but he hasn't called Buffy nubile yet.
Well, yeah, that would have been a dead giveaway. He's holding it in.
Is he related to Sid the Dummy?
Whoa, if that's what Sid the Dummy looked like when he was in his human form. So Spike is lying against a rock and the first slash Drusilla is trying to get him to choose a side, right? She's dancing and she's rhyming and Spike's like, you're not Drusilla. She's crazier than you. And as the first talks to him, the vampire with a Y punches Spike's face twice. And the first says, choose a side, choose our side. You know that it's delicious. What do you say? And Spike's like, Drew, love, get bent. And the first is like, stupid, stubborn daddy. And then the vampire with a Y starts beating on Spike. We don't see it. We just hear it, all the punches. So yeah, Spike's just being tortured in the cave, not with minerals, with fists. We cut to Buffy in the school bathroom tending to her bruises. She like her arm is very severely bruised. She's just like looking at her injuries. Suddenly she's hallucinating, question mark, because she's in her bathroom at home now and Joyce is asking her what happened. And I think she like grabs her arm or something here. And Joyce says, I tried to warn you, but right. The last thing you need now is one of the helpful mom guilt trips. And Buffy's like, Mom, I can't. And Joyce says, Buffy, you have to heal. And Buffy says, I don't have time. Joyce says, are you worried about the sun going down? Because there's some things you can't control. The sun always goes down and the sun always comes back up. And Buffy says, everyone's counting on me. Joyce says, they do that. And I'm sorry, Buffy, but your friends, those friends of yours are putting too much pressure on you. They always have. Buffy says, something evil's coming. Joyce says, evil's already here. It's always here. It's everywhere. Buffy says, I have to stop it. I don't know how yet, but... And Joyce says, Buffy, no matter what your friends expect of you, evil is part of us, all of us. It's natural. No one can stop that. No one can stop nature.
Do you want your evil on a boat? Do you want your evil with a goat? Do you want your evil with a fox? Do you want your evil in a box? Evil is here. Evil is there. Evil is everywhere. Not the best Dr. Seuss, but I understand what Joyce is quoting here.
I think Joyce is a little confused because she should be reading The Grinch, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, because it's Christmas Day. But she went with the second classic.
Green Eggs and Evil.
Would buy for Rosalind. So is this Joyce? Like, we have to ask ourselves the question now. So we've seen Joyce twice this episode, both in Buffy's dream, apparently. And there's so many potentials here because on one hand, it could be the first, because I remember the first manipulating Angel's dreams in Amends. I think she was like the first was part of that as well. However, on the other hand, Buffy has prophetic dreams. Buffy doesn't dream as normal people dreams. She dreams as Slayer, as like she's talked to Faith in her dreams before. She's connected to Angel in a different hell dimension before. So Buffy's dreams are special. So what do you think? Like, is this Joyce? Is this Buffy's subconscious or is it the first?
That's a really good overview of several of the possibilities. I am inclined towards it's Buffy's subconscious. I think that this is the part of her that's realizing that she should slow down and take a break and rest. And the more reckless part of her is ignoring that, right? And she's going to barrel on full steam ahead. And, you know, that has some disastrous results later on in the episode. So this manifestation of Joyce is Buffy's more kind of mature, responsible, strategic part of her brain saying, like, hey, Buffy, like, slow down. This is a big deal. You need to regroup. You need to figure this out. And the conscious part of Buffy's brain is just like, no, no sleep, only Googling.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. I think that is her self-conscious. I think she is actually dreaming and hallucinating because she's tired. So she's having these like dream-like episodes. And I think that it's really important and significant to Buffy's character that the voice in her head that's telling her to take care of herself comes in the form of her mother. I think that is very significant to her. So I'd love to hear what other people think. Me and Cara are saying it is Buffy. It's not Joyce the ghost. And I think a key thing is that I think at one point Joyce touched her, right? And we know that the first can't really touch. So,
well, it is a dream. So I think the first could manifest and touch you in a dream, right? Because nothing's corporeal in a dream. But I also just want to point out, Steph, that I don't think it can be the ghost of Joyce, because let's be real. Wherever Joyce is, whatever heaven dimension she's in, she is so fucking high right now.
I mean, the things that she says in this particular scene are not those of a sober person. The sun goes up, it goes down. Ghost, what do you want?
Real ghost Joyce is stoned out of her mind. She's sitting on a cloud and she's just like, I am higher than this cloud.
She's
right
like,
now.
Buffy, why are you worrying? Just go have a break. Eat a Kit Kat. Seriously, take a second. Chill pill.
I could go for a Kit Kat, and then a Kit Kat shows up because she's in heaven. She's like, this is the best.
Mom, that's not Kit Kat, that's band candy.
I know.
Also, hide the rest of the band candy before all those youths find it in my room. Okay. So Buffy comes to because the bell rings, and suddenly a boy has been sitting across from Buffy at her desk, and she's like, sorry, what were we talking about? And he's like, only my life. He's like, you're just like all the others. And Buffy says, I'm no different. I'm hip. I relate to the young people. Don't go. And the kid, she can't remember his name. And he's like, Roger. And she's like, yeah, I knew that. And he leaves, and Buffy sighs, and Robin Wood is staring at her out of his office window. He's glaring. And if anyone watches The Office, it just reminded me of when Michael Scott used to stare at Ryan when Ryan was taking over Pam's job for a bit. Anyway, pretty comical. And then you know what Roger did right after this, Kara? Roger went to start his own pop punk group in his parents' garage. That's how pissed off he was at Buffy.
The Scoobies are preparing the house for battle. Giles says the sun will go down in 17 minutes. The Potentials are sitting on a couch, and Xander says, don't look so worried. Sure, we don't know where Spike is or how to fight the first or if and when this super style vampire is going to attack us all. However, house boarded up. Now all we got to do is trap this uber vamp in the pantry and it's game over. Willow says, let's ease the newbies into the whole jokes in the face of death thing. And Xander says, who's joking? That pantry thing could work. You saying M. Night Shyamalan lied to us?
I think he's referring to the movie Signs. If I do recall correctly, they trap like an alien or something in the closet or the pantry?
I don't know. I've never seen Signs.
Okay.
I think this is a good point for us to mention, you know, the Summer's residence has been pretty beat up the past couple of episodes, right? As Xander mentioned at the start of this episode. And Steph, I was thinking, like, especially if you have more people kind of moving into this house, maybe it's time for Buffy to put up some new decorations, maybe get some pillowcases, or maybe everybody needs some more tote bags or something. So I think that we should help her out with that.
Well, she knows how to work a computer. We saw that earlier today. So she should, instead of searching evil, she should go to prophecygirls.ca/store. And that's where she might find some really rad decor.
Yeah, you can get wall art. You can get magnets and stickers. You can get mugs. They've got so many designs. Lots of variations of our Prophecy Girls logo. We also just launched this month. Two new designs. You can get dinner on a bag, so you can put dinner in your bag, which would be very good if any of these potentials need to take dinner on the go. You can also get on clothing or various other decor, Stoner Joyce merch.
Yes.
There's a new design by Liz Durth. Her Highness, Stoner Joyce, posing with some band candy. You can get all of that and more at prophecygirls.ca/store.
Woohoo!
So, Buffy, not in a mood to redecorate at the moment. I get it. She says, it's okay. Willow says, okay, or even better. It's like our guarantee that you'll be okay. And then Willow starts to apologize to Buffy about not being able to use magic to help. She says she wishes she could help. And Buffy says, no one expects you to make everything right. No, that's just what everybody expects of you,
no,
Buffy.
No, Buffy, that's your job. Don't forget.
Willow says, I should at least be able to do something. I have so much power, but when I try to use it, Buffy says, don't, okay? And Willow says, you need help, Buffy. I know you, and I know you'll never admit it, but you need help. And Buffy says, I'll be okay. Okay or better. It's like my guarantee. Do we believe her? No.
Nope.
Kennedy asks if they're going to get weapons. Annabelle says, we'll be armed when the Slayer feels we're ready. And Molly says, I feel ready. And I'm liking the different personalities we're getting from these potentials, right? Kennedy is a little bit like forthright and bloodthirsty. She's action oriented. Annabelle, you can tell because she's coming from more of a like a snobby upper class background. You know, she's got that willingness to submit to authority. She wants to be good. She wants to be a good student. She's eager to please. Whereas Molly is just more like not as forthright as Kennedy, but still more hot-headed, like ready to like jump into the fray.
Yeah, you know, and Kennedy's asking all the right questions about survival, right? Like, why are we in the Hellmouth if this is the case? Like, can I get a weapon? Like, you know, I think she's asking the right questions here.
Annabelle says, you're frightened. You must learn to control your fear.
Okay, Wesley.
And this is another way you can tell that they're both British, right? But they're from different backgrounds because Annabelle is looking down on Molly because Molly's from a lower class background. So Kennedy says, you know what would help with that? Weapons. We're sitting ducks without them. Annabelle says, we're with the Slayer, safe as houses. Kennedy says, you see the house we're in? Point Kennedy.
Right? Kennedy's killing it.
The fear kind of starts to get into Annabelle. She says, it'll come straight for us, won't it? And Buffy says, we should load them up, Giles. So as the Giles kind of directs everybody to the weapons chest, Andrew is telling Xander, Andrew's still tied up, by the way. Andrew's telling Xander, I've got a bad feeling about this. My spider senses are tingling. This is going to get hairy. Weird with a beard. Better untie me. And Buffy comes over and asks, how would that help?
Well, that'll help us how?
And Andrew says, I know what you're thinking. Andrew, bad guy. You think of a supervillain like Doctor Doom or Apocalypse or the Riddler. And those are two like heavy hitter villains. And then the Riddler.
He would be closer to the Riddler than the other two.
Right. And Xander and Buffy exchange a look because they're like, we weren't thinking that. But Andrew goes on. He says, I admit I went over to the dark side, but just to pick up a few things. And now I'm back. I've learned. I'm good again.
I like the way he put that. I think that's really funny. Because who in this group hasn't done that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Who among them has not killed one of their friends, right? Like, it's not killed somebody, at least. Anyway, Buffy is killing it this episode. She says, when were you good? And Andrew says, technically never, touche. But I'm like Vader in the last 5 minutes of Jedi. And then he starts to struggle against the ropes. And he says, these ropes itch.
So Giles finds Buffy staring out the window. And he says, sunset should be any minute now. Done everything we can. Don't worry. Everyone here understands that you're calling the shots. And Buffy says, I just hope I'm calling the right ones. Giles says, you have all my faith and they're depending on you. Buffy says, Giles, that's not exactly what I need to hear right now, which is so true. Like, Giles, why are you laying it on so thick? Molly runs in and says, guys, Annabelle split.
So... Why? The show never really establishes why she just leaves. Like, I think we're supposed to infer that she got scared and she thinks she's going to be better on her own.
Because it's coming straight for them,
Uber
right?
Vamp find- yeah, but like, why?
Yeah, I think it comes down to just a horror movie trope, right? The one girl has to take off on her own. And then she's the first target.
And she runs right into the Uber literally van. They get right to, like, in the docks or something.
No. So Annabelle's running down the streets of Sunnydale, but she's in this, like, alleyway dumpster area and behind a factory. And if you think about it, Kara, I was thrown back to episode 6 in season 2, Halloween, because Buffy, when she was in her 1800s, whatever, get up, she ran away from that house and she ended up in a place that looked very similar to this, like a warehouse factory area. And you and I were like, how far did she run? Is this just around the corner? Well, I think this confirms that the Summers house is around the corner from a bunch of factories because Annabelle could not have gotten far. And that she looks to be in the same area.
You have an impressive recall of Sunnydale geography.
Well, thank you very much. I know I should actually draw out a map of what I think Sunnydale looks like. But, like, I just remember us so specifically being like, how far did she get that she's in this, like, industrial area? The only other idea is that the house just happens to be next to all these factories. So Annabelle runs, and then what happens? She runs right into the vampire with a Y, who lifts her up by the throat. And her necklace falls to the ground all bloody. So sometime later, we don't know how long.
We also hear the neck snapping.
I know. I left that out for a reason, Clara.
Sorry.
Sometime later, has it been 5 minutes? Has it been an hour? I would say it's probably been very soon. Buffy probably took off after
several
her.
Days.
it's
New Year's now.
St. Patrick's Day. Buffy finds the body. So Buffy finds Annabelle's body. It's not as torn up as I thought it would be, Kara. Like, I thought it would be like nothing left. Like, Gnarl made a bigger mess.
This vampire is very focused. You're right, but you have to remember, Gnarl was trying to, like, get Xander in trouble on that construction site.
Yes.
This isn't Xander's construction site, so the Uber vamp doesn't care.
Because remember, Gnarl, the lore of Gnarl was that he was supposed to come for Anya's wedding, but he peaced out, found a cave instead. Anya then hired Gnarl to fuck up Xander's career. And he got distracted with his gnarl ways.
Why are we so good at this?
Why are we so good at filling in the cracks of this show? All right. So the vampire with a Y attacks Buffy, hits her a number of times. Buffy's clearly in pain from it. It chokes her at one point. She spits blood in its face and it drops her because it's like, oh, what? That's too disgusting. And then it licks up the blood. It's like, ah, yeah.
It's like, wait a minute. I like
blood. Yeah, wait. Oh, wait. I've been in the cave for too long. This is good. I like this. So Buffy is limping away. There's no way she can jump out to safety now, Kara. Her foot's hurt. So she's running into the factory. And Buffy's...
Okay, but Steph, you may not know this, but actually, if you're limping and injured, you just have to double tap AABA start. And it actually unlocks your secret double jump ability.
Damn. If only Buffy knew. I guess she's not like that advanced of a slayer yet. So Buffy's intuitive, though, and brilliant, because you can see her looking around at everything in the factory, like, what the fuck can I use as a weapon? So she fights with a pipe briefly as the vampire with a Y catches up to her. And then she gets a few shots. She takes a few shots to her face and torso. And she ends up dropping this giant lift of pipes onto the vampire with a Y, like, falls right down on her like Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner.
I do enjoy this, you know, construction scene at night where the crew went home and decided they were going to leave the entire pallet of pipes suspended from the crane.
It took about 10 minutes to get that up there. Forget working from height safety. Forget, you know, overhead safety concerns. Just leave it there. Don't put up any rope. don't let anyone know not to walk under there. Not even a construction sign. Not even a pylon.
No sign. So, Steph, if this had happened on one of your construction sites, what would the memo look like that would come across your desk?
It would be a bunch of emails really late at night, like 1 a.m., being like, the factory is trashed. Multiple pipes who left it above, like, emergency meeting 7 a.m. in the morning on site. The press have to be called. the safety board is coming. It would be fucking messy. All right, so people are getting fired over this for sure. So really, this is not anyone's fault but this factory. So anyway, the point is, Buffy drops these pipes on this vampire, then limps away because surely that killed it. But no, it jumps out of the pipes and is like, no, pipes can kill me. And Buffy's like, ah. So it starts beating up on Buffy so bad, like really bad. It throws her through a brick wall.
This is the second time Buffy has been thrown against a wall. And even as a Slayer, I'm just like, wow, like, how do you not have head trauma? How are you not dead yet?
Well, I mean, it almost kills her because she's then completely buried by stuffs. Sometime later, again, we don't know, 5 minutes, an hour? Is it Easter? Xander and Giles and Willow find her unconscious under the rubble. So many questions, many, many questions. First off, why did the vampire with a Y leave? Did it think that killed her?
Maybe. Or maybe it's toying with her. Maybe it had instructions not to kill her, because the first seems really big on the psychological torture. I think the first is trying to break the spirit of Buffy and her allies, and the best way to do that is to beat the Slayer within an inch of her life and then not kill her.
Also, I know earlier Buffy had said, like, it's trying to kill all the potentials, then Faith, then her. So maybe Buffy, it's important that she's last or something. I don't know.
That could be. I mean, we don't really, I mean, I guess we kind of know because Buffy died at the end of season 5, right? But there was no new Slayer activated. So it's like the Slayer line runs through Faith now. So there wouldn't be a new Slayer called until Faith dies. So yeah, I'm not sure if there's a mystical reason that the first is keeping Buffy alive. There could be, and we just don't know what it is yet. So that's why I'm thinking it's, you know, psychological, but that's a really good point, is maybe there is some kind of magic key, not Dawn, different
no,
kind of key.
Not Dawn again.
But like maybe the order is important. Maybe the first has a reason that it's eliminating all the potentials, like you said, and then Buffy's last.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that was, okay, so that's one question. Another question, okay, Buffy's very injured after this. Like I don't think we've ever seen her this beat up before. It appears that this vampire with a Y is stronger than Glory. Because I mean, someone can come and correct me, but from my recollection, the last time she was beat this bad was by Glory, and Glory was holding back.
Right, so that's the thing, is I don't think the vampire with a Y is stronger than Glory. Glory was holding back. So Glory held back more than this vampire with a Y did.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, Glory was a god. This thing is not a god, right? Like, this thing's just really, really strong. I also just want to defend my girl Buffy here. She's running on like 3 or 4 days without sleep at this point, right? So, you know, she's not in her best condition. And she was already hurt from the first fight with this vampire, right? So I think that if she were rested and healed up,
mm-hmm.
and now that she knows what she's dealing with, I think she could take this vampire on. But because it's a new threat, so far nothing has worked against it except sunlight, which you can't really bring, you know, bottle up and bring around with you. So I think it's more that it's caught Buffy by surprise while she's weakened.
Yes, that's. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, well, they keep saying Buffy's fucking tired.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, like, Glory never beat her up this bad, but maybe she would have had Buffy not peaced out. Right in season 5.
Well, we also have to remember Glory didn't like physical violence, right? She thought that touching humans other than, you know, to do suck jobs was beneath her. She the whole idea of being made of meat was very disturbing to her. And fighting Buffy was her lowering herself to this human plane of existence. And she didn't like that. So for her, fighting Buffy was always kind of a chore. It was something that she stooped to do. Whereas fighting Buffy is literally the primal drive of the vampire with a Y. And in that way, I think it's a better fighter because that's what it's made for. Whereas Glory was just more like, I'm just going to swat you like a bug, right? She was indifferent. So yeah, she had more raw power. And you could even tell when you looked at the fight scenes with Glory was not a fighter. She wasn't an expert in combat and she didn't know how to use that power as effectively as possible. And that, for the most part, didn't matter because of how much power she had. Mm-hmm. Whereas this vampire with a Y, it doesn't necessarily have as much raw power, but it is a trained, skilled, deadly, single-minded, as the first told us, fighter. This is its purpose. And I think that he's very powerful.
Yep, well said. And I also think that earlier you mentioned that you can't bottle up sunshine and carry it around. Well, I think the closest thing that we ever got to that on the show was Drag. Rest in peace, Drag from season 5. Aww. My favorite little minion. With his luminescences. All right. My last question of this is, what did they do with Annabelle's body?
I was thinking that too. I mean, maybe the construction site had to deal with it.
Xander's like, I know exactly what to do. Nothing. Or maybe they chucked her into the dumpster right next to her. And then Spike had sex next to the dumpster later.
No, we can't. I'm not willing. I got to draw a line somewhere, Steph. We can't joke about the Scoobies defiling a corpse. Like, that's not.
We need to know what they
obviously
did.
They brought Buffy home, and then they also brought Annabelle back, and they're going to have like a tasteful burial for her. Rest in peace, Annabelle. You don't deserve this.
Mm-hmm. But that's what you get for running. Just kidding. Sorry, Annabelle. Annabelle, rest in peace. You deserter. Okay. She ran right into the vampire. We're allowed to make fun of her. So the first is asking Spike if he knows why he's alive. You're alive for one reason and one reason only, because I wish it. Do you know why I wish it? Because I'm not done with you. And Spike's like, give it up. Whatever you are, whatever you get away with, I'm out. You can't pull this puppet strings anymore. And the first is like, what makes you think you have a choice? What makes you think you will ever be any good in this world? And Spike says, she does, because she believes in me. And he's talking about Harmony.
We're supposed to go, aww, at this point.
Aww. What are you feeling? If not, aww.
I don't care.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, okay.
I'm willing to let the Spuffies have this one. Like,
sure.
Good for them.
Well, again, it's one-sided. It's on Spike. Buffy's like, we need to get Spike before he does something awful. And Spike's like, she believes in me. What I will say for Spike is he's getting tortured, which is terrible. But I think it's interesting that the first is saying here, like, what makes you think you have a choice? What makes you think that you'll do any good in this world? And isn't that the whole point, the whole question around vampires with a soul, right? We've already handled this with Angel. Angel has like 5 whole seasons of his own show dealing with these kind of questions. I will give it to Spike in this episode. Because he could easily be like, yeah, I'll be your minion because I don't want to get beat up anymore. But having the soul is having the choice, right? I'm choosing to defy you. I'm choosing Buffy's side. I'm choosing to do good, right? And that's what it comes down to. That's why the first is saying, how do you know you'll do any good? Well, he's choosing to, and that's a big deal.
I have trouble imagining waking up and choosing to do good.
Yeah. No, it's like I'd rather
doing good
be bad to the bone. No. Over here,
I've never done a day of good in my life, Steph. I'm bad to the bone. I'm a bad girl.
You really are. You're a bad girl. Faith better get all her tricks from you. Buffy is sitting in the chair in her room? Question mark. I thought she was in her room. I think from the wallpaper, she's in her room. Anyway, she's got contusions on her face. She's bruises. She's not looking good. All right, this is the most beat up we've ever seen her. Can she hear what they're saying in downstairs or in the other room?
Yes.
Can she? Okay. Yes. I was thinking she couldn't.
And the camera's like zooming in on her, and she's got the same kind of catatonic expression that she had in The Weight of the World.
But that's why I thought she's like blocking it all out.
No, she's that's the only thing she can hear right now.
Okay.
Right? Like, that's why we're focused on her while everybody else is a voiceover, and it's because she's hearing them talk about her in the third person as if she's out of it, as if she's lost and they have to figure out how to go on without her.
She's got amazing hearing because Dawn had to sit on the stairs to eavesdrop in that dining.
Senses.
she just opened the vent next to the chair. She can hear everything perfectly. So Giles is saying, Buffy was our plan. There is no backup. Will's like, Giles, she looks bad. Giles says, she does. I'm afraid there may be internal bleeding. She won't die. I don't think so. I don't know. Willow. Okay. I just laughed at that because Giles is like, if you think she has internal bleeding, bring her to the goddamn hospital. So Willow says, what will we do if she can't fight? If she can't beat this thing? Giles says, we're back at square one. And everyone is in the dining room, right? All of them, the Scoobies, the potentials. Giles says, the first predates everything we've ever known or can know. It's everywhere. It's pure. I don't know if we can fight it. Giles, you've been saying this since you got here. Give us something new. Buffy comes in then. She says, you're right. We don't know how to fight it. We don't know when it will come. We can't run, can't hide, can't pretend it's not the end. It's not the end, because it is. Something's always been there to try and destroy the world. We've beaten them back, but we're not dealing with them anymore. We're dealing with the reason they exist. Evil, the strongest, the first. I'm beyond tired. I'm beyond scared. I'm standing on the mouth of hell, and it's going to swallow me whole. And it can choke on me. We're not ready. They're not ready. They think we're going to wait for the end to come like we always do. I'm done waiting. They want an apocalypse. Oh, we'll give them one. Anyone else who wants to run, do it now. Because we just became an army. We just declared war. From now on, we won't just face our worst fears. We'll seek them out. We will find them and cut up their hearts one by one until the first shows itself for what it really is. And I'll kill it myself. There's only one thing on this earth more powerful than evil. That's us. Any questions? Fade to black. Yep. Question, Kara. Yep. You in the back.
What's for dinner?
Right. Don, what kind of mac and cheese is this? I liked the speech. You know,
it's a good speech.
It is good.
It's a Buffy speech.
It's a Buffy speech. I like that it starts off being like, Buffy is fucking defeated. She's like, I don't know. And then, but it's not. She's literally like, fuck that. Like, I'm ready. Bring it on. And that's why the episode's called like Bring On the Night. Buffy's literally like, fine, bring it on. And then the knight's like, it's already been brought in.
Okay. But do you think she believes it? Because the other possible reading of this is that she is defeated, right? This is the putting the book back on the shelf in the magic box moment for Buffy that we saw in season 5 in The Weight of the World. Mm-hmm. But she's learned since then, and she's decided, well, I've decided that we're beat, but everybody depends on me to be the leader. So I'm going to go in there and I'm going to make up this incredible, inspirational, rousing speech, even though I think it's all bullshit. And I'm just, you know, going to keep going.
I understand where that type of thinking can come from, Kara. But I think that you are embracing season 6 Buffy, and I'm embracing what we've seen of season 7 Buffy so far, who apparently has a superiority.
Being devil's advocate.
Well, Buffy apparently has a superiority complex. But just think about it. A couple of episodes, like we said since the beginning of the season that Buffy's been on her fucking game. Like, she's stronger than ever before.
Don't forget, Steph, she also has an inferiority complex.
Shut up, Holden. Buffy has been on her game. She's more confident than she's ever been. Even when she was fighting Holden, she was like sad because she's like, well, I'm going to win. You know, like, I'm better. I'm just going to win. So I don't think that she lost that just because this vampire with a Y kicked her ass. I think that she knows that she can beat him. I think the fact that like everyone, including her own subconscious, is telling her she's fucking tired, go to sleep. I think she's realizing what you and I pointed out, that she's weakened in this episode because she's not at her best self. She's not 110%. She's 30%. So she's like, of course this thing beat me. I'm not being my best self. So I think she had to do this speech to rouse the troops. I think she was a little bit more intense than she normally had to be? Yeah, but I think the time called for it. These people are losing faith in her. Will's like, what if she can't beat it? And Giles is like, she's dying. And these other Scoobies were like, these other potentials came in and were like, her? Really? So I think she had to give this rousing, superior, confident speech. I think she believes it. And I think that's still consistent with where she's been going this season.
Interesting, because I can also see seeds in this season of a theme along the lines of Buffy's overconfident. And, you know, there are things in this world that she can't save, as we saw with Cassie, right? And or even just like the whole Anya Halfrek thing, right? Like, Buffy is very confident in her abilities. She's very good at fighting vampires. And then suddenly the show chucks this vampire with a Y at her that she can't defeat right away. And it's checking her. Again, I'm just kind of being devil's advocate here, because I actually do, like, honestly agree with you, Steph. Mm-hmm. And that's a great way of explaining my viewpoint as well. But I wanted to offer that alternative reading, because I do think it's interesting how, you know, if we're going off of her conversation with Holden in conversations with dead people, it feels like somebody's calling Buffy on her superiority and saying, well, actually, you should embrace that inferiority complex.
Yeah, hey, there's so many ways to look at this speech and look at Buffy's character as it is right now. I don't think this is a weak point for her. I think it's too soon for her to have fought something and been like, I'm defeated. Not this vampire with a Y. Not today. Not Christmas Day. Not on our watch on episode 10. Who's your hero?
Head Joyce.
Subconscious Joyce.
She's telling Buffy what she should be hearing. Listen to the hallucination of your mother, Buffy.
Joyce coming in for the steal of the hero. I chose doxepin or melatonin or any sleep-related medicine or aid that will help anybody to sleep, because sleep is important, people. I agree with Head Joyce, Giles, and even Xander in this episode for telling Buffy to go the fuck to sleep.
Except on nights that Props or Girls drops, in which case you should stand for it. Prove your love to us by listening to us the moment we come out.
Some people really do. We know who you are.
I know. Yeah. It's very sweet. Yeah. I have two other quick thoughts. Mm-hmm. First, I actually have a plan for defeating the first evil. I can't talk about it right now because there's spoilers involved, but later on in the season, I will tell you what my plan is because I think it's pretty good.
Does it involve ramen noodles?
It could.
I'm not saying it doesn't. Can't wait.
I can make it involve ramen if that will make you pay more attention.
Yeah, it will.
Well, I was planning to do the whole classical music while I'm sketching on a projector in the Sunnydale University Lecture Theater.
Buffy will patrol tonight.
Steph will patrol tonight with Angel.
I'm listening. Paying attention. Go on.
I thought you might. Yeah. Second, I meant to bring this up during the episode and then I just completely forgot. I noticed in this episode, and I did not have time to go back and kind of scan through season 7 and see kind of when this started. There seems to be a lot more handheld camera shots in this season than in previous seasons. Because I was just thinking back to like seasons 1 and 2 and how earlier in the series, the camera shots were a lot more static and it was a lot more like, yeah, there were a lot of cuts to different angles, but the camera would just kind of sit there unless it had a reason to pan or zoom. And in this episode, I really noticed, especially in the scene where they are preparing for the Uber Vamp's arrival and Willow is apologizing to Buffy. And in the close-up and the two angles on Allison and Sarah Michelle, you can really kind of see the camera moving around and you know, it's got that kind of jiggle that it has when it's being handheld. And that was kind of the style around this time in the early 2000s. I remember TV shows like Battlestar Galactica would really use the handheld camera almost, in my opinion, to nauseating effect. So I don't know. It really kind of jumped out at me in this episode. And I wonder if that was a deliberate choice on the part of the director to kind of give the episode a bit more of that on the ground, in your face. It's this urgent kind of feeling to it. I don't know if there are any kind of film nerds out there that want to comment on camera angles and techniques and stuff. I'd love to hear your hot steaks. Speaking of hot steaks, we've got a couple here. First one is from Frankie talking about Anya in Selfless. They say, I came up with an incredibly ridiculous theory. Go on, Frankie.
Yeah. I'm listening.
Why Anya is now afraid of bunnies. Okay, so Anya gets a vengeance call from a woman, and she's a DIY girl, and tells Anya to make her husband into a rabbit so she can kill him herself. Based on episode 2, we know that Anya likes to embellish. She turns the guy into a giant, monstrous, rabbit-esque demon. Big Bunny goes Godzilla, attacks the village until the slayer of that generation kills it. And Anya hasn't trusted bunnies since. This is the most not canon theory that I've ever come up with, but I'm standing by it. Sure. Why not?
I want to see a picture of it. I want to see a drawing, a comic.
Yeah, give us some fan art.
Yeah. Don't just stop there. Go all the way. So, thanks, Frankie. Brad is next. Brad wants to talk about Holden from Conversation with Dead People. Brad says that Holden called Scott Hope gay. Who? Oh yeah, Scott Hope. So Holden called Scott gay. I think it was because at the time he was playing a gay guy on Queer as Folk, which was a show. And a couple people pointed that out to us after we covered that episode. So could be a little, you know, inside joke in the writer's room.
Lastly, Cameron commenting on Buffy in Conversations with Dead People says, I don't think Buffy necessarily has borderline personality disorder. However, the observation about the inferiority complex, about her superiority complex, has always really connected with me as a person who does have borderline. It really captures the experience of splitting, seeing things in black and white, all good or all bad extremes, on myself. The feeling that I am simultaneously better than and worse than everybody else. It's a really shameful symptom for me personally, because it doesn't align with my actual feelings or values when it comes to others. But seeing it described non-judgmentally, even by a psych major vamp, is really affirming. Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that perspective.
Thanks, Cameron. I can't believe we're almost halfway through the season. We got two episodes
left. Yeah, next week we'll be halfway through. Get your hot steaks in while you can, people. They're coming in hot. As hot as they've ever been. We're putting our dinner in a bag.
Smoldering hot.
But the end is coming soon. It's going to come faster than you think.
Yeah.
And remember, we record 2 weeks ahead. So get those hot steaks
3 weeks ahead, basically, right? Because we're recording Tuesdays now. So you guys have to send them as early as you can.
A couple of shout outs. I've been a little bit lapsed at shouting people out on the podcast as they support us on Buy Me a Coffee. So thank you. And, you know, if I already shouted you out, you get a bonus one here. And if I miss you at some point in the next couple of weeks, please let me know. But thank you, Leanne, Stephanie, and a new chosen one who joined us a while back, Lauren, who says, I've been a Buffy fan since I was 11. The first episode I saw was a rerun of The Pack on the FX channel. I've fond memories of naming numerous pets Buffy, Giles, Willow, and Xander. Gluing popsicle stick crosses in my bedroom, riding my bike to the library to print out all the lyrics to Once More with Feeling, and begging my mom for holy water for my birthday. Thank you, Lauren, for your support. Thank you, all of our Buy Me a Coffee supporters, for your support, especially our chosen ones. In addition to Lauren, we have Brandon, Kimmy, Christy, Jasmine, Susanna, Reese, Joshua, Luis, Nicola, Julian, Jordan, Kayla, Holly,
Emma, Kyle, Destiny, Erica, Allison, Jace, Haley, Tasha, Ricky, Amy, Rochelle, Laura, and Bahia. Thanks, everybody. See you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Prophecy Girls. If you want and can afford to donate, head on over to buymeacoffee.com/prophecygirls for one-time and monthly options.
You can also visit prophecygirls.ca/store to view all of our merch and rep the podcast on a sweatshirt, mug, sticker, or more.
We appreciate all of your support, even if it's just spreading the word about us or enjoying our show week by week.
We also invite you to join in the discussion by messaging us on our social media channels.
Follow us at Prophecy Girls Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy_Girls on Twitter.
You can also email us at prophecygirlspodcast@gmail.com or visit our website, prophecygirls.ca, where you can find the link to our Discord.
Praise Moloch.
See you next week.